Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2, by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 12. Dinner was safe. She followed his advice. Then the one-legged man showed up. Dinner was working hard that day. The bunker was safe and warm, and no one wanted to eat her. So when Dinner was given a mop and was taught how to use it, she cleaned like there was no tomorrow. Because to Dinner, tomorrow was the least certain thing in her life. If she did a good job, maybe the adults would want to keep her. Dinner remembered Arthur's advice well. It was anti-intuitive. It was not at all what she would have expected. But adults often made no sense, so Dinner just adopted his advice and hoped that she would better understand it someday when she grew up. He told her that if she wanted to be safe, that working hard was a bad thing. He told her that they would promote her, and that she would have to work outside, where the danger was. She shouldn't be too bad at her job, but just enough that they would keep her there. Arthur seemed to have the best in mind for her, so she followed his advice. This was the strangest part, knowing that a man wanted the best for her. Every man she had ever met used women and little girls. Men of the Wastes treated girls like they weren't people. This she knew for a long time. It was easy to think that Arthur had motives, but he disappeared. Her life got better, and when she next saw him, he wanted nothing in return. So she followed his advice. She would leave spots untouched in the corners. If there was metal in the hallway, she would not polish it. She would wear her oversized uniform and clean the bunker, but she would not leave it spotless. For a couple of days, there was nothing to worry about. For a couple of days, she could relax, even play. She could play. This was what was the best of all. She did so quietly, as she did most things and had learned from her captors. But she played nonetheless. The adults still frightened her, especially the men. But when she was alone, fear subsided into fun. A woman that she worked with and ate by. Dinner ate every day now. Gave her a plastic doll during their off time. It was amazing. Dinner had her first toy. She owned something. But then the one-legged man arrived. He was skinny, skinnier than anyone else in the bunker. Near death, he was riddled with tumors, and one of his legs was not real. His name was Table. Table had just lost his leg. He had foolishly run into IRS territory without an escort and had his knee shot off by a sniper. Now he walked on a plastic leg, scavenged from a female mannequin and leather belts and constructed with poor craftsmanship. He was put to work the moment he could open his eyes, and he was bad at it. Table had met Arthur as well. Arthur had taken a book from him, and Table had been captive, like Dinner, to a bad man. She felt sorry for Table. Until he stole her doll, that is. That's when she started sharpening a butter knife. She would get her doll back. Dinner had to work the same hours as Table, and occasionally they would cross paths. She would diligently leave a hallway just slightly dirty, as she was told, and then she would see Table's work. Wet, sporadic, and still dirty. Table was terrible at his job. Maybe it was the one leg. Maybe it was the pain from the missing leg. Maybe Table was too old and too crazy to learn his job. It did not matter. Table was the worst. And this, by comparison, made Dinner look like the very best. She slacked off even more. Unmopped corners became whole sections of hallways. She polished nothing, and she did her best not to try. She just wanted to be safe. She just wanted to eat. She just wanted to play. Still, table's poor work made hers look Olympian. Then she was summoned to Boyd's office. Boyd. Well, Boyd made sense to her. Boyd definitely acted like a man. Boyd wanted something. His mustache was funny, his seriousness almost dour, and his eyes looked like those of a very patient predator. She had seen the same eyes in her captors.
"We are very pleased with your performance. I am happy to announce that we plan on promoting you," Boyd announced to the little girl after drinking half a mug of coffee.
The dreaded word, the one that Arthur had warned her about. Promotion. She began to cry, and even that, like all things she did, was silent.
"Oh, come on now," Boyd said in a soothing way she did not have a word for, because father was not a thing she had ever encountered. "Don't cry. A promotion is a good thing. You'll be paid more, and you'll be an auditor, just like your friend Arthur."
"I don't want to be like Arthur," she said through hot tears.
"No, and why not?"
Dinner wiped her eyes with a sleeve that swallowed her hand.
Because I want to be safe," she said. "Please, please don't promotion me."
Henry S. Boyd smiled then. It was a smile that she understood. It was a bad smile.
"Maybe we can make a deal," he said.
Dinner nodded vigorously.
"Do you like Arthur?" Boyd asked.
She nodded once more.
"Oh, but Arthur brought in your new friend, Table. Table is mean, isn't he?"
"Very mean,"
Dinner said, knowing exactly where she kept her shiv.
"I think it was pretty mean of Arthur to bring in Table. But then again, Arthur is kind of mean himself, isn't he?"
She did not know how to answer this. She knew that Boyd was like all of the men she had ever met. She knew that he wanted something, and when men did not get what they wanted... She nodded hesitantly.
"I'll tell you what," he said, with fingers intertwined in front of his funny mustache. "If you do a favor for me, I'll promote Table instead, and you can keep your job."
Dinner started to feel elated. She started to feel hope.
"Okay,"
she said, her tears dried, and nodded excitedly.
"Have you killed before?"
Dinner had a new job. It was a dangerous one, but it was a temporary one, and the faster she could get it done, the faster she could be safe once more. She could not sleep that night. She stayed up thinking about Boyd's favor. Arthur had a mean and clever friend. This friend was sharp. She could see her killers from a mile away, and she was very good at defending herself. She would make sure that no one would kill Arthur. She would be looking for scary men. Like Dinner, she had grown up outside. She knew that men were bad. She would never suspect Dinner. She would be assigned to Rabia, and Boyd would send a man after them, knowing that Rabia could handle him. This was so that she would suspect Dinner even less.
"An outsider has to do it," Boyd had explained, "or else everyone will know that I had something to do with it. And if that happens, I can't give you your job back."
Rabia would take her to Arthur, and she would have to do the rest. She hid her shiv in the side of her boots. But then Rabia handed her a gun. Dinner was much better with a gun. Guns were easy. The hardest part? Dinner liked Rabia. Rabia did not want anything from her. Rabia gave her crayons. Dinner also liked Arthur. But as Boyd had explained to her, she liked her job even more. People died in the United Wastes. That was her first lesson in life. Bad things happened to good people, and the bad people got to live. That's just how things were. The hardest part was that she did not want bad things to happen to good people. But Dinner? Well, she wanted to live. There was no way for Dinner to know that Boyd had no intentions of holding up on his end of the deal. She could not know that she would be banished the moment she killed another agent. She was just a desperate child who had grown up in the most desperate of all worlds. Now Dinner was running away from Rabia. The pill did not work as well as she had hoped. But then again, Rabia did a lot of drugs. She should have asked for another one.
A part of her hoped that Rabia would never get to Slaver City. A part of her hoped that the car ride would go on forever. But it didn't, and now she was hiding from a woman she had hoped would be her friend. She had thought that she might have to hide forever, or at least for a very long time, after breaking the pill into Rabia's coffee, and after Rabia fell down onto the car. She sneaked out and crawled under the first van that she came across. No one saw her do it. Dinner was always quiet. She waited. She held her breath. She closed her eyes. She heard the man walk back into the van above her. She waited. Then she exhaled and opened her eyes. Rabia was gone. Then she waited some more. She did not just wait in case Rabia was still around. No. She waited because she knew that the very next thing she would have to do was kill Arthur. She waited and pretended that she was back at the bunker. She counted to three, and she scurried out from her hiding place. The motion had undone her clip-on tie. She left it where it lay. The morning light was still dim and sleepy. The sun had yet to peek over the mountain. When they had arrived, the city ahead of them seemed abandoned, and the IRS camp was still almost haunted-looking. Now that Robbie had stampeded through the operations section of the camp, screaming incoherently about the British while brandishing a harpoon gun at anyone foolish enough to look her way, the camp had stirred. Tents began to open. Agents started to creep out. Dinner had no idea where to start, so she hesitantly went the direction that Robbie had gone. She walked slowly through the rows of tents and kept a sharp ear for any sounds of the woman she had just drugged. There were none. It wasn't until she saw a group of men huddled around something that she knew why. Dinner was small. This made it easy for her to step through the crowd. If the men were gathered around anything else, the sight of a little girl on the battlefield, unattended, mind you, might have given them pause. But this? Well, this was not anything else. Rabia was sprawled across the ground next to a pile of vomit. Cocaine made her normally radiant brown face look ashen, and a harpoon gun as long as she was tall lay parallel to her, looking just as lifeless. A man in leathers, an enforcer, squatted down beside her, two of his fingers pressed against her neck, just below her ears. His face was sullen, serious. It was the face of a man who knew the score. "Her heart's slow and palpitating," he said. Then removed his fingers and lifted Rabia from under her shoulders. "Grab her legs," he shouted to the man opposite of him. The crowd dispersed, but not completely. They left just enough room for the two men to navigate themselves, and Rabia, out to one of the medical tents. Dinner tugged the sides of the nearest agent's pants urgently, a sleepy-looking auditor whose hair had not yet been combed or settled for the day. When the man looked down to investigate the author of his annoyance, Dinner spoke up the second she caught his eyes.
"What's wrong? What's palpitating mean?" she asked, fighting back tears, knowing already that it was bad.
"She's dying," the man said, with more surprise than worry. There were a lot of things in this world that Dinner did not understand. Aside from the fact that she was very young, she was raised to be eaten, then kidnapped from her parents to be eaten by someone else. But death? She understood death perfectly well. She understood death far better and far more intimately than any child her own age should. Her tears could not be held. Rabia was dying, and it was all her fault. She did not want this to happen. She had hoped that she could skip this part. But it was part of the deal. What the first assassin said about Arthur's killer coming for Rabia if he failed was perfectly true. He just wasn't aware of the details. Boyd made sure that she understood that she had to take out Rabia next. He even promised that she would not see it coming, that it would be easy. She could have her job back. But she did not want to kill Rabia. Agreed to it? Sure. But that was before she had met her, had grown to love her. She wanted to skip this part. She wanted to let Rabia live. The pill was only supposed to put her asleep. The pill was not supposed to do this. For the first time in her life, Dinner shed tears of sorrow that were not silent.
I don't want her to,
she said through her anguish. She could only get a few breaths between each sob. For the first time in her life, she cried, and someone could hear it. For the first time, she cried, and everyone could hear it. Rabia was her friend. She loved Rabia. The pill was supposed to put her asleep. She suddenly did not care about her job. She suddenly did not care about what could happen to her if she did not kill Arthur. She only wanted her friend back. She begged. She begged to anybody, to everybody around her.
Please, please don't let her die.
She spat out between painful sobs.
She's my friend.
Was. The agents around her, her co-workers, stood aghast in silent awkwardness. When no one moved, when no one would allow her simple request, one that should always be fulfilled, she started to run. She darted off in the direction of the medical tent.
She wanted to see Rabia, to apologize, to tell her that she loved her and that she was sorry, and to please come back.
But she was cut short. The agent beside her, the man with the stringy and unkempt hair, had grabbed her by the hand.
You don't want to go in there, little girl, he said, with the final authority of an adult.
She fought him at first. He couldn't give her what she wanted, and what she wanted was selfish, yes, but it was also somehow not. Why should she listen to him? But like all of the men she had ever tried to fight, he was stronger than her, and while her face ached with tears, and her body exerted more energy than she should have left, he had barely engaged his muscles. For a split second, she contemplated taking out her shiv, but her anguish had won out. Dinner fell limp in his arms, and she cried, helpless to what had happened.
What the fuck is happening, Ralph? A man said behind her. How am I supposed to know, Rich? The man holding her said. Arthur's old enforcer just ran through the camp screaming about England while on drugs, holding a whale gun when she suddenly fell over. And now this child is bawling her eyes out.
Even through her own grieving and pleading, even through her own loud and terrible tears, Dinner heard the only part of what the man said that was important. Arthur.
Jesus, Richard said. What the hell?
I said I don't know, Rich. Open your ears.
Dinner should have known that she could not have everything that she wanted. She should have learned by now that the world was cruel and that it hated children.
Damn, Ralph, it's just an expression, said Richard.
Dinner should have known that conniving adults always got what they wanted. She should have known not to get attached to anyone.
It's not an expression, Richard, it's a question. What the hell is a question?
Above all, Dinner should have known liking someone. No, loving someone was always a mistake. People died. It was the only thing that she knew for certain about people. She wanted this to be different. She wanted Robbie to live. She wanted her to wake up, to forgive her, and she wanted to be safe. She wanted too much. Now she could only have one of those things. She could still be safe.
You're a dick in the morning, Ralph, said Richard.
There's no going back. Dinner had to kill Arthur next. She could at least be safe. Sad, but safe. She tugged at Ralph's pants once more, her tears subsiding, not because the pain was leaving, but because she was a fucking child of the United Wastes. You learned to do the rest of your crying when you slept. Ralph looked once more at the child beneath him.
You know Arthur? She asked.
Yes, I know Arthur, said Ralph.
Her face was red and swollen from tears. Her little fists were clenched tightly. Her friend was dead. She had no more friends. She had one thing left, and it was a job to do.
Take me to him, she said.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.
Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. No one is holding a gun to my head to say this, but they are withholding the antidote. Funding for this podcast comes from ebook and paperback sales of A Happy Bureaucracy, the book. Send a warning to your straight-laced and prudish books on your bookcase by adding paperback copies of A Happy Bureaucracy, Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, and Post-Apocalyptic Pirates. Just head over to my website, mpfitzgerald.art. Once more, that's mpfitzgerald.art.